We all wish we could talk to animals. As it turns out, we can. Animal Connections with Laura Rowley explores the nature of interspecies communication. What are our animals trying to tell us? Animals commune through love, a force that opens all doors. Listening to them teaches us how to be better humans. Why? We can trust them to tell us the deepest truth about who we are and how one can grow into a more powerful version of self. Laura shares over 20 years of stories and wisdom learned from her work as an animal communicator in this hard and thought-provoking show.
Welcome, I'm Laura Rowley. You can listen to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Listen online or on your mobile devices. To learn more and for a full schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network is the media partner for Omega Institute. Thank you for joining me today. We have a lovely show I hope you enjoy, set up thinking about some ideas that have been really just swirling through my practice the last couple of weeks. Oftentimes when I'm wondering what topic to share, I discover that the topic sort of starts to present itself because more and more cases come to me illustrating the same themes or along the same line of thinking. And it's almost like it teaches me then what I'm supposed to think about in my own life, how I can help each person as they call up with their issues and problems, thoughts, ideas with the animals that they live with. And as I learn from my own practice, I try to apply it with each person differently. And of course, I try to apply it within my own life because I do try to practice what I preach, which is that our animals teach us things and they teach us about ourselves, and they can be sort of a mirror that we can use to reflect into our own lives and how we make choices and how we feel feelings and what our core beliefs are. So the theme that presented itself in the last month to me with regularity, excuse me, I have a little cold today, was that animals are, of course, part of our family. So animals, companions, join us in such an intimate way, they become part of our family. We even call them the family dog or the family cat. People who have horse barns call it the barn cat, but of course, people think of their barns as an extension of their hearts and an extension of their homes, in fact. So we have this sense of community with the animals that is really special, maybe even more special than our friendships or the things that we have in the social world or in the work world. They are an intimate piece of our lives together. So I was looking at that and wondering, sometimes we can choose our friends, but we can't really choose our family. I mean, that's kind of the big joke, right? Everybody rolls their eyes and says, well, you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your family. But I don't know, people choose their companion animals and they become family. So it's kind of a strange little crossover there between friendship and familyhood. So familyhood implies that, you know, there's a dedication and a devotion that no matter what happens, you'll be there for them. And yet it turns out that a lot of animals end up in shelters or have to be rehomed for some reason or another. In other words, there's a break in that family tie, or maybe the family tie never really got cemented to start with because perhaps it was sort of a bad fit between the animal's needs and the person's ideas or ideals of what a good dog or a good cat would represent. For instance, a lot of the SPCA's information tells us that so many animals are rehomed because there's behavioral problems or issues with compatibility. In fact, approximately 3.2 million shelter animals are adopted yearly. That's from the ASPCA. Now, that's just in the United States only, so I'm only quoting the United States here because I just didn't have data for the world. They don't have data for the world, unfortunately. So about half of those, 1.6 million, are cats, and 1.6 million are dogs. So that's 3.2 million shelter animals are adopted yearly. Now, that probably doesn't represent all of the animals that are unfortunately put into shelters that don't get adopted. We're just going to push that idea aside for now and talk about the ones that do get chosen. In the old days, like when I was a kid, it was a trend where you went to a breeder and you selected a dog. You wanted a Cocker Spaniel, you wanted a German Shepherd, Irish Setters. Those were all big breeds when I was a kid. Now everyone pretty much considers going to a shelter and considering that as the alternate to a breeder. So they're going to a shelter to choose a part of their family, and 20 or 30% of all dogs that are in households come from shelters. So that's kind of a big number. So a lot of us think, I'm going to go to a shelter. Well, that's fabulous and generous, kind. It's people wanting to do the right thing. So they go to the shelter and they read the little cards on the shelter. If you've ever been to a shelter, it's a daunting experience because every animal wants to come home with you or looks like they're in need of love, even if they are not at the front of their kennel hoping for adoption. They're at the back of their kennel cowering because they're upset. So it's heart-rending to go, especially if you're an animal communicator. But I think anyone that goes and just looks at that with an open heart and kindness is on some level communicating with love and trying to figure out, well, who shall I love? Who shall I take home as my family member? Some of us want to take them all home. Most of us probably want to take them all home. But we all sensibly realize we're smart to start where we can take care of them properly, form a good relationship with them. So we read all the little cards as we walk down the aisle of the shelters. There's usually a little card. The staff may know the dog's name. They may not know the dog's name. They might call him, 13-year-old female, mixed breed, or it might have a dog's name like Max, good with cats, some sort of description, or not good with children, or must be kept alone. So there's some sort of a description if the shelter is lucky enough to have had honest owners that when they brought the animal in, they told them a little bit of something about what that dog's or cat's needs are. You know, maybe doesn't get along well with other cats, has health issues. Some animals are high maintenance because of their health issues. So that as you walk along in the shelter and try to determine who will now be in your family, you can read maybe what the problems are or maybe some of the issues around why they didn't work out in their last home. So it's an interesting time, I think, and it speaks volumes for how open and generous we have become as a culture that we don't go to the breeders and say, oh, I want the perfect animal for me. I want to have it have a pedigree. I want it to be perfect and know its parents and select it for myself. Now, there's nothing wrong with that path at all, because you do, in fact, get to do that if you want to do that. But a lot of us are choosing to pick an animal, 3.2 million of them, that has trouble, that needs help. And so our hearts are opening up and we're saying, well, I'll take that on. And that's a big thing to take on because we're choosing a family member that probably has a little bit of history. We're picking a shelter animal with baggage. In other words, it might have been somebody else's problem animal, and we're saying, oh, that's okay, I'll take care of that. So it's not just that we're buying dog food and we're taking them to the vet and we're walking them and we're also saying, oh, well, no problem is big enough. It's too small, too big, I'll take it on. We're saying, okay, bring it on me. I got this. I'll fix this issue with this dog or with this cat. And so lots of times, that's where I come in because people call me and they want to do the best. They've rehomed an animal and their official reason for calling me is they want to understand the animal's needs. They want to understand maybe some of the stranger behavioral problems that they're seeing. So my work as an animal communicator is to try to smooth out those areas where there's misunderstandings, to try to let each party know what's happening with the other party. Like, what are the thought processes that are causing the behavior? If, in fact, they are thought processes, sometimes they're just sort of trained behaviors, which aren't really entailing a lot of thinking. They're just sort of knee-jerk reactions to something, to some sort of stimulus. But even so, it's helpful for the person to know that. So in my work, I try to make everyone understand everyone else. And a couple things that come up pretty routinely were exemplified by this little dog I worked with about 2 weeks ago. And I think his name was Max. And they got Max home. Fabulous little kind of beagle kind of creature with big eyes, adorable. He was a mixed breed. And they were delighted with him. He was really sweet. He loved to sit on their laps. It was seemingly an excellent match until Max started to urinate in the corner of the carpet in the living room with complete regularity. Go for a walk outside, have plenty of opportunity to empty his bladder where it would be appropriate outdoors. Instead, would come back inside, walk across the garage floor into the living room, lift his leg on the corner of the fireplace. So, of course, the people when they adopted him didn't know that he had that issue, but that's probably was his issue. So, I got talking to Max, and I just asked him, what's up with that? How come you're peeing inside the house? And it turns out that Max thought it was extremely thoughtful of them to provide him with a rug, because in his previous circumstances, he lived in more of a kennel or a concrete surface, and when he would urinate, he would splash his legs and really like that. So he was very happy to have a carpet so that, you know, we didn't have the splashing problem. And it was just his special spot, and he thought these people were just so considerate to have done that for him. And, I mean, I'm laughing now, but it kind of wasn't too funny to them at the time. So we had to process that with Max and explain a little bit about, you know, the reality of things and what would be appropriate, and that actually that wasn't designed for him, that he was supposed to go outside. But it turns out the people that had him kept him either in a kennel, I couldn't tell which when I was talking to him, they show me pictures. So he showed me a concrete floor. It was a nice, spacious, clean place, and it looked like it was a garage that maybe went out a doggy door into a little run-in that also had concrete flooring. So, you know, he had to urinate on a concrete floor. And he didn't really associate the great outdoors as something that was his. His space was the kennel. His space was the run, the concrete place. So the fact that he walked through their garage into their living room, crossed the concrete, and look, they gave him this nice soft thing to pee on was perfect. So we discussed it, and Max actually stopped doing it. It took a little while because he was pretty confused because he'd been doing that for years. Max, I think, was 5 or 6 years old. So it took a little while to figure that out with him in terms of retraining him. But in fact, they did. After we talked about it, he immediately improved and started to get the idea he could go outside instead of hold it. another example of a new home was this lovely little filly, which is a foal that's a girl horse. And her name is Cloud. And the people brought her home. Having taken her from a place where she wasn't really in a shelter, but she was in a place where she needed to be rehomed. So she wasn't very well handled, meaning she didn't always respond well to the cues. And it's a big animal. You know, we're talking about an animal that maybe weighs 500 or 600 pounds when they're young, trying to go this way or that way with the person just sort of dangling along. So it takes the person quite a bit of training. Well, this baby horse was awesome. It walked right onto the horse trailer. They drove it, I don't know, 800 miles to their farm. She got her off the trailer. She was excellent for the first 2 days. And then all of a sudden, they led her from the pasture into the beautiful barn, lovely barn, historic old barn, to her lovely stall that had her name on it, and she completely freaked out, ran backwards, almost fell down, got loose, galloped around the property. Everyone was trying to catch her. It was heart-rending and really scary because she was just running blind into things, over things, not necessarily going around people, but almost through them. So this happened 2 different days in a row. So they called me on the third day and said, what is wrong with this horse? Can she think? Or, you know, what's her deal? And so I talked to Cloud, and it turned out a similar situation was with her and was as with Max. She didn't understand the concrete. She was in a dirt paddock where she was raised, and so it was soft sand. And when she walked onto the concrete, beautiful surface that was swept beautifully and tidily at this barn, she skidded a little on the concrete. She could feel there wasn't solidness under her feet. She felt ungrounded and very frightened. and kind of like she was ice skating, and she'd never in her life experienced concrete. So horses have hard feet, and they don't have a way to dig in. So she felt like she was ice skating, and it terrified her that all of a sudden the world went from a place where it's soft, squishy ground, you could push off and walk and expect to know where your feet were going next, to a place where suddenly your feet were sliding and slipping and you were totally at risk. So Cloud was amazing because we had a conversation with her about this. We put a rubber mat in front of her stall so that she didn't have to walk across the concrete. We explained to her it would be the same color as the concrete floor, this blackish mat, but that it would be squishy and safe. And she immediately changed into a peaceful creature. She stopped rolling her eyes. She, you know, calmed down. She was very manageable. The people let her in and out. Really, I think from that point on, I know within the next day, they sent me a lovely email with a little picture of her walking across the rubber mat into her new stall. Another strange and beautiful case that happened in the last couple weeks was a dog named Champ. So Champ refused to come. They got him home. They got him from a shelter. They were all excited about him, and he would stay 10 to 15 feet away from them. And every time they would approach him, unless they had a leash on and could restrain him, he would run backwards and cower. So you'd go 4 steps forward, he'd go 10 steps backwards. So they couldn't get near him. And Chase had never had the opportunity, it turns out, to bond with a human. So he was craving companionship. He would say, well, I want to be with him. And they're like, no, he doesn't. He doesn't seem to want to be with us at all. He runs backwards when we go near him. But he did want to, he wasn't running to the next county. He was staying near them, but he was afraid to be touched because it turns out he hadn't been touched much, which most of us take that for granted. But if you're any kind of baby in any kind of species and no one touches you much, you don't really appreciate that that is soothing and feels comfortable and feels kind of wonderful. So poor Champ was always sort of slipping backwards from their grasp. And then, of course, they would run towards him with their hands out. And he said, it's like they're going to hit me. So that probably happened to him. I don't usually, when I talk to animals who have negative history, try to talk too much about any sort of abuse because most of them don't really want to review that. It might please us to know what happened, but they usually find it mortifying and awful, and they really don't want to, they don't really want to go into it with us. So I could tell somebody had raised their hands above their head. So, you know, we worked with the lovely people that had him to try to focus on what they could do to make this better. And I'll tell you a little bit more about how that one comes out later. But it was just kind of interesting that we have people who are treating animals as their family. And most ill behavior in animals boils down to a misunderstanding or an alienation. In other words, they didn't have time to respond in a way, they don't have a frontal lobe like we do where they can reason it out like, oh, I'm in my new home. How safe is this? This is lovely. They have to only respond to what's worked before for them or what hasn't worked before for them. Or like, for instance, Cloud, she could only respond based on, I've only stepped on dirt before. How would I know that concrete is slippery? No wonder I'm afraid of it. So we make these assumptions about our family members too, I think. Sometimes we don't always recognize that people, sometimes we have our frontal lobes, but we're still sometimes sort of responding, in other words, to stimuli or to past alienations, past fears that rise forward. And this happens to all of us every day. We kind of don't recognize that we could be sympathetic and perhaps compassionate and work on our empathy towards one another, just like these shelter animals were teaching these people to work on their empathy, because they certainly had tons of it or they would not have adopted an animal. But it really stretches you when your house is getting peed on or the horse is galloping around the barn to go, oh, I understand this perfectly. I have no trouble with it. I know they must just be having a hard time. So it's a tricky thing because it goes into our core beliefs. What do we believe is true? That dogs shouldn't pee in the living room? We do believe that. But here is a dog that is doing that. So what do we do about it? So you have to really sit back down with yourself and ask yourself, well, from his perspective, why would he want to do this? Why would this be a good idea? And I don't care. I would say almost any person I talk to in my life has an animal that does an odd thing, myself included, where it's sort of intrusive on our lives as humans. You know, it's not quite what we had in mind. Our dog gets under the rock in the front yard, which is an enormous kind of boulder, digs in and tries to find any animals that might be under there, which I find heart-rending and frightening because, you know, what if he does find an animal under there? He could get hurt. They could get hurt. The rock could fall on him. I don't know. So, I mean, even I have trouble with that, and I have to talk to him, and he's a terrier, and he doesn't really want to listen because he's pretty sure that he knows what's best because he's a terrier. He's got a strong opinion, and he likes to do what he likes to do. So we have to take a lot of this with a grain of salt. So, but isn't it interesting that 3.2 million people would choose a companion animal that is somebody else's problem or that has baggage? I think that kind of does a lot for us. I think it's amazing and wonderful and something that we should all be sort of proud of. But I think you also have to be prepared for yourself that when you do that, you are taking on somebody or something with a little bit of baggage. And my suggestion is that we pick them for many reasons. We pick them because we want to help. We pick them because they're cute. We pick them because maybe they look desperate and we want to help. But energetically, we pick an animal because from our heart, we understand that they will help us grow. And that's what we're going to talk about in our next segment. Thank you for joining me. This is Laura Rowley and Animal Connections with Laura Rowley.
Animal Connections with Laura Rowley is an intuitive show created for you to learn what it's like to talk to animals. Laura shares 20 years of experiences of being a pet psychic and healer every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, media partner for the Omega Institute. Our beloved animals share our lives and have amazing insights into our well-being, providing us with opportunities for personal growth once we truly begin to listen. It's fun to use animal wisdom to enhance our emotional and spiritual world. Who better than our furry friends to teach us the wisdom born of unconditional love?
Omega Institute, offering workshops, retreats, and online learning dedicated to awakening the best in the human spirit. For over 40 years, Omega has seen more than 1 million people come through its doors to grow, learn, and find a greater sense of purpose. With over 350 workshops to choose from, Omega offers something for everyone. Located in Rhinebeck, New York, just 90 miles north of New York City, Omega's natural environment and quiet pace allow for extraordinary experiences to unfold. Learn more at eomega.org or call 877-944-2002. Again, 877-944-2002.
Quantum Jumps presents a radical new paradigm that we exist in an interconnected holographic multiverse in which we literally jump from one parallel universe to another. In a moment, you can become smarter, more confident, happier, more outgoing, more effective, in better relationships, with more willpower. When you sense a new connection to another possible you, living the life you'd prefer, immerse yourself naturally into that new state of being. And voila, you've made a quantum jump. Supported by scientific research, Quantum Jumps is an inspirational book backed with practical tools to help you live a happier, more prosperous life. Learn more at quantumjumps.com.
What if your dog, cat, or horse could help you with your love life? What would they suggest? It's fun to think about and a wonderful way to conduct yourself. After all, animals know well how to love and invite us to love them unconditionally. That's a pretty great way to live life. Animals always communicate with our highest good as their central focus, even when sometimes we feel stymied or frustrated with their behavior. Visit laurarowleyhealer.com to book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading. Laura's readings and workshops help you find the part of you that's able to tune in and connect to your amazing animals. Laura Rowley believes we can all understand by listening differently. Book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading now by going to laurarowleyhealer.com. That's LAURARROWLEY healer.com.
Get ready to meet your personal team of light on the other side with psychic medium Laura Lynn Jackson. Omega Institute presents An Illuminated Life, opening to the secret language of the universe, June 7th to 9th in Rhinebeck, New York. Guided by Laura Lynn Jackson, you'll learn to connect with angels, spirit guides, and loved ones who have crossed over. For 20% off, mention discount code DREAM when you register for An Illuminated Life with Laura Lynn Jackson. Learn more at eomega.org.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back. This is Laura Rowley, and you are listening to Laura Rowley, Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Thank you for joining me today. We have been discussing the energy behind adopting an animal into your family, making it your own, what it takes from a perspective of dedication, empathy, compassion. It can be a little bit draining initially. It sometimes takes a while for everybody to get on the same page. So sometimes it takes endurance to just sort of live through those first few weeks or months until everybody understands everyone. Sometimes I can help as an animal communicator. That's my job. I try to make the passage smoother when I can by explaining to the person what the animal is doing and explaining to the animal what the person's standards of excellence are and what the rules are for society that we are following and that they don't have to follow and they've never really thought of before. So that always presents an interesting byway for me to see and process with people some very interesting emotions, because we get frustrated. So, or we get happy, or we fall in love, and all of those things all at once, which is pretty amazing and pretty wonderful. And it seems to me that energetically we pick an animal that we know might have some troubles because we sense, we kind of know with an intuitive kind of tug that animal will help us grow. I mean, yes, we want to help them. But we also know that we are taking on a little project that will challenge us. And everybody likes challenges. We all want to grow. We all want to change. We all want to evolve. And animals, when we take them into our lives, any new relationship, a person or an animal, causes us to challenge our core beliefs and to draw others to us who might actually challenge them for us. I mean, I think that's an energetic match that happens quite effortlessly. We're just drawn to certain people. We're drawn to certain animals because somehow maybe there's a piece of them in us. Maybe we recognize something that responds to something that we need to work on. I think we're amazing. I think we are constantly evolving. And energetically, we draw people, circumstances, even bad circumstances, even difficult animals to us so that we can work on our own stuff. So sometimes the owners that I speak with, or I call them owners because, I don't know, the people that have companion animals, they want to process with me. They recognize that there's some emotion that tugs on them. Like, they don't get rid of the dog that pees on the rug, little Max who was peeing on the rug. They didn't say, well, he's out of here. We're going back to the shelter with him. They called an animal communicator and said, well, what are we doing wrong? Why can't we do this better? What's Max confused about? So they were willing to put love before sort of reason. You know, they were like, I'm going to figure this out based on love. So other people who call me, they don't maybe want to process all that with me, and that's fine. They may do it in their own time, in their own way. It's up to them. If they want to discuss the deeper part of the connectivity energetically between them and their animal, I'll always go there because I think that's such juicy, ripe things for people to work on themselves. But if you're not in the mood for that, you just want the dog to not pee, well, then we do that too. there's a place and a time for everything, and I don't have a judgment about that. But in the case with the three examples that I brought to you, they were people that really kind of called me because they did want to process their own stuff. They did want to grow from the experience. So Max, our carpet urinator, he was thinking it was convenient and thoughtful that they gave him a carpet to pee on. So when I discussed it with the young woman who adopted him, she was a mother of two toddlers, had her own business, her husband traveled all the time, and they were new to each other. It was a second marriage for her, and they were very in love. But it turns out that her husband was a little bit inconsiderate, is how she described him. These are her words, not mine. He allowed her to have responsibility for everything in the house. So it worked for him. You know, she burst out when I was talking to her. My whole life is spent cleaning up other people's stuff. And now I've got this dog and I've got to clean up after him. This is ridiculous. And my husband is never even home. And so I'm the one that has to do it. And I have to take care of the kids and I clean up after them all day long. I follow everybody around just cleaning up. And now there's this dog. She was irate, upset, you know, really letting her emotions out, which was good. I was happy she was doing that. I'm a good sounding board to do that with. I understand frustration. So she had a new marriage with an untidy partner. And he enjoyed the convenience of a woman who loved a clean and tidy home. He didn't care too much, so he let her take responsibility for the home. And she needed to stop maybe allowing him to do that. She was kind of mothering him. Like, oh, I don't want him to be upset with Max, so I clean the rug all the time. Does he love Max? Yes. Does he want to take care of Max? Yes. Well, then let him help you. She wasn't really allowing any help. Her core belief was, I'm always responsible. No one else is. It's my job. Everything is my job. And then she's mad at her new husband, who she loved dearly, because she felt he was sort of sliding through his responsibilities, but it was kind of her that was saying, well, I'm always the one that has to take care of things and smooth the water for my kids, smooth the water for my husband. I can't let anybody be upset. I have to be a good housekeeper because he takes care of me. I don't have to work. So this is my answer, is to never, ever let him be responsible for anything in the home. So she heard herself saying that to me as we talked about it. And the more she heard herself sort of defending herself and her position, the more she heard herself saying something that wasn't very, it's not a position that's very manageable long term, right? It's a hard way to live, to think you're going to smooth the water for everyone else. And a lot of people live like this, right? They forget that perhaps the people they live with really won't mind helping, or they're just not aware of the fact that you're doing so much for them. And if you left a few things for them or talked to them about it, they probably would want to help you. And if they don't, then maybe you need to work on that. So we talked about it like that, and she got laughing. She said, oh my gosh, this is, you know, such a good thing for me to think about, because her core belief, I'm always responsible, isn't really true. We're not responsible for other people's needs. Now, she was responsible for Max's needs, but Max pointed out to her that, I thought you were doing a nice thing for me. Again, you're doing another nice thing where you're willing to sacrifice yourself. So part of what we worked with, I think she ended up getting a trainer to help her, but she did send me a little note that he was much better and very responsive. And she started to show her displeasure with Max. She used to just roll her eyes and clean up after him and kind of go, oh, Max, and grumble at him. Instead, she made a big deal, like, this is not okay. And, you know, fussed with him, didn't yell at him, but showed her disappointment, made, you know, frowned at him, gave him body language that showed him this is horrible, and waited until he saw that, then took him right outside to the green grass, where he eventually learned, there she smiled, she made her voice happy and light, yay. And he was like, oh, I'm starting to get this. She's happy when I'm outside, not so happy when I'm next to the fireplace on the living room rug. So she was really dedicated to deciding to make her feelings known, to make him responsible for where he urinated. And then as she did that, I don't know what she did with her husband, but she had a light come on about herself. She had a light that she could be responsible for her own happiness instead of making her husband be responsible for her unhappiness or her happiness. Tell him what you want. Let him help you. So that was a big aha and very She laughed at herself. We usually have fun in these sessions because we can always laugh at ourselves. There's always something we could be doing better, always, in our relationships. And so the little horse Cloud, the little filly I was telling you about that fell down in the aisle and was afraid of ice skating on the concrete and ran around and, you know, sort of displayed hysteria as a coping mechanism. So she, in fact, belonged to this woman who, just a lovely girl. I've actually been working with her on and off for maybe 10 years. And this woman is so sensible. If you wanted to have anybody help you with anything, whenever you're in a state of overwhelm, you would call her and say, could you please help me fix this? Would you help me pack? Could you help me think? She's one of those really organized people that is equipped with just this inherent kind thoughtfulness, like, oh, I know just how we can fix this for you and we'll get it done. She's very good at that. So she gets this horse that's kind of never does that. All it does is freak out. It's hysterical. It runs all around hurting people, running over people, running into fences when she gets scared. So this was a challenge for this woman because she's clear-headed with no drama, no emotion ever. And then she gets Cloud, who's sort of so sensitive that it's kind of crazy. She can't even, she's afraid of the ground she walks on, right? So we talked it over with Cloud and we worked it out with Cloud. As I told you earlier, we found the rubber mat solution that calmed her down, but it enabled Cloud to trust the woman a little bit better. And it enabled the woman to find an easy place to say, okay, we're on safe ground now here. Just stand still while we train you and while we work with you and so you'll get comfortable. But it never occurred to this woman how fear of the unknown can rock another person or animal's world. Never occurred to her. She's so solid herself that she never feels any emotions. She just takes care of troubles. She takes care of issues. She makes a list. She gets it done. She uses her mind really well. But she wasn't necessarily able to tune into the idea that hysteria often happens to people. And it turns out that she has a job that if she can learn to be helpful with people who are a little bit hysterical, she can make their lives better. But at a sacrifice for herself, because she never lets herself feel anything. She never takes care of her own troubles. She's always rescuing everyone else, very similar to the issue with Max. It's kind of interesting, too, that both animals had issues with what was going on with the ground. And they both had people associated with them who were kind of hyperly responsible for others. So this woman had a really great session, and she realized that she could spend more time working on herself, thinking about herself and her own feelings, and not be quite so willing to rescue others rather than process her own. And then the other one that was pretty juicy was Champ, the dog that kept slipping away. He never wanted to settle. And that story is interesting because that went really deep. Sometimes these things are pretty simple, like don't pee here, pee there. Don't do this, do that. Come to your owner when you want to. Don't come to your, you know, like simple business. But in this case, this young woman was so, I don't know, alive and thinking about what she wanted to learn from this dog that wouldn't come to them. And, you know, she knew somehow inherently, intuitively, that there was some really good growth opportunities for her there. And so she called me up and, you know, we went to work on why the dog wouldn't come, but I'm pretty sure a trainer can help with most of those things. I mean, I know I helped because I told the dog, please don't do that. They just want you to come and they're trying to establish a relationship with you and they'll never hurt you, which made him feel safe. And when we feel safe, we can let love in. When we don't feel safe, we don't want love in. That's kind of how that goes. So lots of times with animals, if you can make them feel safe, then love prevails because you get rid of the fear. And once you move the fear to one side, then love can start to take over the rest of everything. And once we're feeling love, then we're not afraid to be open, to be challenged, to try. If we're always only in fear, we can never take those steps forward. So this woman knew that she was definitely seeing some part of herself that was deeply afraid. So we're just going to take a break here. We'll get back to that in just a few moments. You're listening to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
What if your dog, cat, or horse could help you with your love life? What would they suggest? It's fun to think about and a wonderful way to conduct yourself. After all, animals know well how to love and invite us to love them unconditionally. That's a pretty great way to live life. Animals always communicate with our highest good as their central focus, even when sometimes we feel stymied or frustrated with their behavior. Visit laurarowleyhealer.com to book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading. Laura's readings and workshops help you find the part of you that's able to tune in and connect to your amazing animals. Laura Rowley believes we can all understand by listening differently. Book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading now by going to laurarowleyhealer.com. That's L-A-U-R-A-R-O-W-L-E-Y healer.com.
Are you searching for a way to help create global change? Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's vision is to have an eclectic group of radio hosts dedicated to educating, enlightening, and helping humankind with positive messages and tools that enhance lives using different modalities and programs. If you would like to join our team and help illuminate the universe, call Deborah at 508-226-1723 or Deborah at dreamvision7radio.com.
Do you sometimes feel like your life is a series of problems to be solved rather than an adventure to open to? Do your challenges often bring up fear, worry, anxiety, and confusion rather than empowering you to your core? Explore powerful tools and techniques offered by Mary O'Malley in her new book, What's in the Way is the Way, and experience ease, peace, joy, and a deep trust in this amazing adventure called life. To find out more about what Mary offers, visit her website at maryomalley.com.
Animal Connections with Laura Rowley is an intuitive show created for you to learn what it's like to talk to animals. Laura shares 20 years of experiences of being a pet psychic and healer every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, media partner for the Omega Institute. Our beloved animals share our lives and have amazing insights into our well-being, providing us with opportunities for personal growth once we truly begin to listen. It's fun to use animal wisdom to enhance our emotional and spiritual world. Who better than our furry friends to teach us the wisdom born of unconditional love?
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back. I'm Laura Rowley, and you are listening to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can listen online or on your mobile devices. To learn more and for a full schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network is the media partner for Omega Institute. Welcome back. We were just discussing the case of Champ. Champ was this lovely dog who they got from a shelter, and he would not come when he was called. In fact, he slithered backwards when any time anyone approached him. The more they came towards him, the more he backed up. And yet, when they would turn around and walk away, he'd follow them like, oh, please take me with you. I want to be with you. I want to be with you. So the woman, her name was Deanna. Deanna recognized that perhaps there was something to learn from Champ in her own behavior. So she called me up and she's like, okay, I know you're going to help me with the dog. I'd worked with her with some of her horses before. So she knew that I like to do this kind of work. And so she said, what is going on with this dog that I have a dog that does that, and I have kind of a lot of boyfriends that are like this. So I said, oh, really? I said, you recognize that parallel? And she said, yes. Oh, yes, I certainly did. And she started to laugh at herself because she was kind of like, I'm going to tell you the dirt about myself. So she said she was single, and she enjoyed flirtation, basically. She didn't really want to be settled down with anyone. She was kind of a serial dater, and she fled the minute things got serious. So are you seeing a connection here? So she laughed when she was in her 20s about all this. It was funny. She loved to date. If they got too serious, she headed the other way. She played games with people a little bit. But when she was in her 20s and young, no harm, no foul. She tried not to be cruel or mean, but she was very lighthearted about the whole thing. But she wanted to have kids. So as she got into her later into her 30s, she suddenly realized, like, if you want kids, you probably have to pick a mate so that you can have kids. And she wasn't really settling down with anyone. She was always testing people to see if they were the real deal. And everyone was always coming up not quite the real deal. So they never were passing muster, which is good to be selective, of course, we can say. Good for her. But she also sensed that she wasn't giving people much of a chance. Like, she wasn't really getting to know, in this case, these men. She wasn't getting to know these men. She was asking them to be in a relationship, get them kind of serious about her, and then backing off when they got too serious. So I said, well, why do you do that? And she goes, well, I'm wondering, and then I was talking to her about Champ, and she said, I realize I'm sort of doing the same thing. I'm asking for love, but unless I can control it completely, I back away. And I said, well, gosh, that sounds like the kind of thing you'd maybe want to talk to a counselor about. And she said, of course I will. In fact, she was in therapy, but she said the dog is the reason she realized she maybe needed therapy, but until we had this conversation, it hadn't occurred to her quite how obvious the dog's behavior mirrored exactly what she'd been doing for 2 decades. I mean, she was actually really funny about it. She was laughing, like, this is amazing, because she could sense when she was a kid, she lived in a lot of different countries, and she had a family. They were in the Navy, and so she was always the new kid everywhere she went when she was a kid. And so she learned quickly to sense that she couldn't really trust people. She was always the new kid. She always got challenged. She was always afraid to be bullied. So she kind of got, I don't know, cagey about it. Like, I'm not going to pursue you. You have to pursue me. And that way she didn't risk sort of going through all the heart-rending stuff that happens when you're the new kid. It can be very painful. She didn't ever have to be rejected if she was the one doing the rejecting, in other words. So we talked about that. And she had never really realized how, I guess, defensive she had become and how wary she was of a new opportunity or a new place. So she would take control of it by being elusive, which is, of course, what Champ was doing, too. He wanted to be with them, but he was just so scared. You know, his life had changed so much that he didn't trust that he was in a safe place. So as she talked, Deanna and I and Champ, the three of us, had this beautiful conversation where we really chatted about, well, you're safe if you decide to be safe. You know, if you can see evidence of love around you and you can see that people are genuine, you could try to trust yourself enough to be able to know the difference between people that are ingenuine and people that are the real deal, people that are genuinely offering you love or a home or a relationship, a friendship. And so ultimately, it isn't that you have to trust other people. It's that you have to trust yourself that you can see the difference between those that are not genuine and those that are genuine. And if you can trust yourself enough to be cagey and smart, you certainly can do this step. It's just the next step. It's stepping out of fear and into trust, which is a big deal. It's a hard thing to do. And so the more we talked about it, the more the two of them really started to energetically, I can see the energy fields of the people and the animals I'm working with, and I don't see them in any great detail unless someone asks me to look in great detail, but I can see that the energy between Champ and Deanna started to blend. They were starting to merge in a way that happens whenever we have a relationship. Our energy actually starts to come out of our own bodies, usually right around our heart, sometimes around our hands, certainly through our mouths, and a kind of a love cloud comes out of us, and we start to embrace the people around us or the animals around us. And they sense it, and they start to respond and like, so that we eventually create sort of a big love cloud around ourselves. And whenever we put into that cloud, if we put fearful thoughts into that cloud, the cloud kind of diminishes and goes away and everybody pulls back. If we put loving thoughts, I trust them, I respect them, it's all going to be okay, then the love cloud extends towards each other, and then we have this feeling of mutual respect, mutual honor, mutual love. So I could see as we talked that this was really starting to happen for Deanna because she wanted to stop being alone. She didn't really admire how she was living her life. She wanted change. She was ready for a partner. She decided to grow out of her fears, look at her core beliefs, and challenge them. Now, she maybe needed to work with somebody other than an animal communicator to get there all the way, but we only know what we have to fix once we recognize that we have to fix it. So in some way, Champ pointed this out for her. And then once we decide we're going to get better and we decide to do whatever we need to do to get better, we will get better. We will change our core beliefs. It's like taking out the old dead wood out of a tree, and then the rest of the tree can rebloom and new branches grow and new leaves grow. And so she saw, I have a lot of dead wood that I'm dragging around, and you know, this isn't really who I wanted to be when I started out as a kid. I wanted to be a loving human. I wanted to be a mother. I wanted to be an unafraid person to trust. So how did I end up here, right? So little Champ had shown her the way, and she's on her way, right? Whatever happens, she's on her way. And we have to be kind to ourselves when we do that because we have sensed in ourselves some sort of unease. And the animal's behavior is sort of a hint that something within us is out of balance. So we might be, in other words, running like old software that needs updating. She was running the software of being an elementary school-aged child living in many different countries, never feeling like she was home, always knowing these would never be permanent friends. But now, here she was, she could just change her software to being a woman who had a family, a community, children, a mate. So there was no reason to carry the old software forward. How about just think about the computer is a good analogy. It isn't always so easy to just update your software, but if you know you want to, that's the first step. And if the second step is you know you want to, then what are you going to do about it? And you find a network of professionals and friends, and your own self and your own heart. You trust yourself to do it. And so we can always heal our lives once we start to examine these core beliefs. And that's a really big point because I think we're on Earth. Myself, this is just my belief, that we're here to constantly improve ourselves, to grow, to learn our lessons, to change, to evolve, to expand. And so expansion sometimes means recognizing that our old beliefs, I don't know, do you have to hash them over and over again, or can you just go, oh, never mind that anymore, I'm not doing that anymore. And every time you recognize yourself doing that, you have a sense of relief. Ah, I caught myself almost starting to go to that old place that I used to like to go to all the time. I mean, one of the beautiful things about animals that I have personally found wonderful in my life is they don't say, I told you so. You know, they don't go, oh, you're doing that again. You're such a jerk. They just love us while we're doing it. But then they'll start to respond differently as we change. Almost all the animals I talk to you about change after the sessions that we do together, not because of my work. I mean, I facilitate something that happens in those sessions. And that is, they both send out that cloud of love that said, let's trust each other a little more, okay? Let's try to find common ground. And as we work from a place of love and less fear, then all of a sudden the differences dissolve between us. And that's a beautiful thing. It's a simple process. But until we kind of recognize that we have to go in there and look at our core beliefs, then change our core beliefs, we can't do it. So when we go to the shelters where we take on animals that have maybe had a pretty rough life for some reason, the person was a bad fit, the situation was wrong, or sometimes it's a perfectly, you know, nice situation. Someone gets sick, they can't keep their dog anymore. But the dog is facing rejection. The dog has been confused. He's fearful. He misses his owner. He's mourning. All of those things. So when we walk into, whether it's a shelter or a breeder's, and we say, I'm going to take this animal and I'm going to let it in. And why is it that one person is so drawn to one animal and another person is totally drawn to another? I don't just think it's a story told by the cards that are on the animal shelter's cages, the individual cages for each animal. I think it's more a matter of our heart is drawn into sort of the abyss that we have in ourselves where we think, that one's going to teach me something and I'm going to love it and then it's going to love me back and that's a cool thing. And so there's this kind of amazing thing. I always tell people, go with your heart open when you go to see the litter of puppies that you're going to select or the litter of kittens or when you're going to go try your first horse. I know we check off the boxes. You know, is it family friendly? Does it like other dogs? Is it good with animals? Does it like children? Is it a safe horse to ride? We check off all those mental boxes, of course. We talk to the veterinarian. Is it a sound and healthy animal? Of course, those are all nice pieces, but really, none of that matters if your heart part isn't fulfilled. And so always go when you go to select a new animal with that heart open and say, you know what, I'm going to trust some part of myself deeply to help something deeply here. Because the deeper you go, the more you grow. And that's a pretty wonderful thing. It's a pretty wonderful opportunity. And your family grows with you because you'll see things differently and they'll see things differently. And sometimes it's not horrible if it's a bad match to find a different person to be that person's animal. If you're not up to it, it's okay to be brave and strong and say, I'm going to do the right thing here and I'm going to let this go because I don't have time right now, but later on I'm going to take care of this thing that bothers me about myself. So in other words, we don't have to be perfect, but we can certainly go with an open heart and radiate love when you're in that shelter because that's the most important thing to them and to yourself. And I want to thank you very much for listening. It's always wonderful. And you've been listening to Laura Rowley, and this is Animal Connections with Laura Rowley, and I'm on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can listen online or on your mobile devices. To learn more and for a full schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network is the media partner for Omega Institute. Thank you.
Thank you for joining Animal Connections with Laura Rowley. Heard every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Join Laura next time to discover how you can embrace the wisdom flowing from your loved animals. Communication starts with an intention to understand. Each week, Laura helps you find your own unique ability to create a better understanding of yourself as taught through the loving eyes of your animals. To connect with Laura Rowley, go to laurarowleyhealer.com. That's LauraRowley, healer.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.